This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
And welcome. We've gathered here tonight around the fire as people of all lands have gathered for thousands and thousands of years before us to share the light and to share a story. An amazing story as old as time itself, but still being written. And though each of us has our own individual stories to tell, a true adventure emerges when we bring them all together as one. I hope you enjoy our story tonight, Reflections of Earth.
Hello, everybody. In late September of this year, Walt Disney World introduced us to the successor to Illuminations, Reflections of Earth, and that is called Harmonious. Now, Illuminations had been performing in Epcot for a long time as Illuminations, Reflections of Earth. However, there were several predecessors that went back much further than that, and in honor of these predecessors and in honor of Illuminations' longevity, we thought a look back to these nighttime spectaculars would offer a timely and deep appreciation of just how Epcot ever got to Illuminations, Reflections of Earth. Now, before we get into the really heavy-duty discussion on the nighttime spectaculars at Epcot, I think it's important to take a look at World Showcase. A lot of people may think that World Showcase was the brainchild of Disney Imagineering, coming up with a themed country pavilion approach to a theme park. I'm not sure if that happened, and I'll tell you why. Let's go back, a couple hundred years, because I think that the concept of the World Showcase area of Epcot may have been born back in the 18th century. And I know you're thinking, wait a minute, Mike, you're talking about going back a couple hundred years, and something a couple hundred years may have influenced part of a Walt Disney World theme park. And I'm saying, yeah, it could be. Well, anyways, hear me out. So, 1780, in a small town named Waldkirch, which is located in Germany, lived a man by the name of Paul Mack. And in 1780, Paul Mack founded a series of workshops in which he started building carriages and stagecoaches. As his craftsmanship improved and grew, he opened up a company called the Mack Company. I think it was called the Mack Company at that time. And they continued to build carriages and stagecoaches. And then in 1880, they started building other things. They started building organ wagons and caravans for traveling showmen. This was, again, in 1880. That was when it was recognized that this particular company started getting involved in the amusement industry. So the company name today is known as Mack Rides. At the beginning of the 20th century, this family business started producing attractions for what was recognized and called fun fairs. Give you an example. So they built the first wooden roller coaster, and the first time they built a wooden roller coaster was 1921. Then they built a car ride in 1936 and a wooden bobsled ride in 1951. So right around a year later, by 1952, Mack Rides really, really started increasing its exports of rides to the United States market. In 1972, Franz Mack and his son Roland came to the United States. It was a big trip, and the trip involved visiting some well-known theme parks, and they wanted to take a look at them. And when they left the United States, they had pretty much convinced themselves with the idea of building their own theme park where they could showcase the rides that they built and manufactured in Waalkirch. So they put their idea to work and they designed and built their own theme park. On July 12, 1975, they opened up Europa Park in Rust, Germany. It was well received. It was a huge success that first year, 1975. They saw 250,000 visitors, but that exploded. The following year, it went to 700,000, and I think they passed 1 million guests in 1978. The park was really popular, and experts think that what was really the draw was that it was a park that had a European-themed area with European countries. That park has something like, sees about 6 million a year, 6 million guests a year, or visitors. The park has over 100 attractions. It's got 18 themed areas and 6 themed hotels. And it also has an associated water park, a water world. It's called Rulantica, I think it is. But it's a park that has country pavilions, like a certain park that we're talking about. But another thing I wanted to mention is that there's a particular icon in that park, that Europa Park. It's an icon that I think a lot of us would recognize. It's pretty familiar. It's a geosphere. Yeah, it looks just like Spaceship Earth, except that it looks like it's Spaceship Earth's little child or whatever. But does that sound familiar? Does it sound familiar? Country-themed areas, pavilions, geosphere, the whole thing. What's funny is that same year, 1975, Busch Gardens, the old country, that's what it was called, in Williamsburg, Virginia, also opened. And that was the first United States theme park that had a World's Fair kind of persona. And also it was a park just like Europa that introduced pavilions on the basis of countries. It's funny because I think both parks had like long and winding paths from pavilion to pavilion. I don't think and Epcot doesn't have that. You know, everybody listening knows that it's a big 1.3-mile loop around World Showcase, and you go from country to country. So why are we talking about this? And basically, it's because when you think of it, you put World Showcase together with Future World, and you have World Showcase Lagoon right in the middle. And the World Showcase Lagoon serves as a centerpiece for Epcot, just like Cinderella Castle in Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom serves as a centerpiece for the Magic Kingdom. And as we all know, it's that central area where everyone goes to watch nighttime spectaculars. And my guess is that the Imagineers had visions of World Showcase Lagoon as being that area where fireworks would be displayed because, number one, it's the most visible place in the park. And down the road, the plan was that you could watch any type of nighttime fireworks show from anywhere around the lagoon, and you would have very few, if any, obstructed views. Let's start talking about how we got to Illuminations. Epcot opened on October 1st, 1982, but the first nighttime fireworks show did not make its debut until October 23rd, 1982. That show was called Le Carnaval de Lumière, which translated, I believe, is the Carnival of Light. And it featured You know, it's the first show, so they were trying a few things. They had rear projection screens, they had water fountains, and of course they had fireworks. And it was, you know, their first show, and they had some limitations. One of the limitations was that you could view it only between the Canada Pavilion and the Mexico Pavilion. You could not see it from any other areas, and I don't know exactly why, but I think it has something to do with how they use the projection screens. That show did not last too long. It didn't even last a year, I believe, because the next summer it was replaced by a show called A New World Fantasy. It was June or July 1983. Now, that show used what they called Picha lights, P-I-C-H-I-A, I think it's spelt. And they rotated and they flickered horizontally and vertically. It was a little bit more advanced than the previous show, The Carnival of Light. Again, this show was limited with the views. The viewing area ranged from Canada through World Showcase Plaza and up to Mexico. Obviously, the plans were to increase the viewing area, and it did. It came in less than a year, because in 1984, the following year, it seemed like they were doing something every year. I think it was June 9th was the debut of Laser. June 9th, 1984 was the debut of the Laserphonic Fantasy. That show could be seen from all around World Showcase. And there was a few interesting things that show brought with it. They started using barges to launch fireworks. They had some interesting water fountains. They also used fog and laser effects in the show. So that show saw much more fireworks than the previous shows. And it was that show that we first saw those fireworks cannons that are installed along the edges of World Showcase Lagoon, and they would fire off these Roman candle type streaks. They would go from the shore to the middle of the lagoon. Think of the very first streak of fireworks that you would see when illuminations would begin. I think it was usually fired from United Kingdom or Canada or whatever. Those are the fireworks cannons that I speak of. That show was operated from two booths. One booth was installed in Canada and the other one was in Mexico. And that was a big show. I mean, it was introducing a new effects that, you know, would be used down the road with other shows. The first time we hear the word illuminations was on January 30th, 1988. Illuminations on January 30th, 1988 took that Laserphonic Fantasy show and they added a few things to it. They added more fog effects. They added more lasers. They brought in a central barge. They introduced new music. They added more fountains. They had more pavilion lighting. As a matter of fact, the original sponsor, General Electric, installed special lighting effects on the 9 pavilions that were in existence at that time. If you recall, the Norway Pavilion and the China Pavilion had not been built yet in World Showcase. So in 1988, there were just 9 pavilions. The new music was basically a combination of classical music. It wasn't the music that we were all familiar with Reflections of Earth down the road. In 1994, we had the first holiday illuminations. They played traditional holiday music from around the world. Eventually, that would be replaced by what we know today as the Christmas tags. They do that around Christmas, and of course is the July 4th tag at the theme parks. On October 3rd, 1996, we were introduced to Illuminations 25 for the Walt Disney World 25th anniversary celebration. Little editorial comment, if they were going to do Illuminations 25 for the 25th anniversary, why not do Illuminations 50 for the 50th anniversary instead of spending a lot of money on Harmonious? Editorial comment. Let's get back to the discussion. The 25th anniversary celebration was a 15-month celebration, and on February 1st, 1998, the 25 number was dropped, and we went back to that show being called just Illuminations. On September 22nd, 1999, we were introduced to Illuminations 2000, Reflections of Earth. That was the first time we heard the term Reflections of Earth. Let me jog your memory a little bit. That was when we would see the big hand of Mickey holding a wand and stars coming out of the wand. That was attached to Spaceship Earth back in 2000. It was that particular rendition of that nighttime fireworks at Epcot where I kind of think it was a key milestone in the history of Epcot's nighttime spectaculars. That was the millennium, and Gavin Greenaway was brought in to compose the music for the show. On January 1st, 2001, the show was renamed again. They took off the 2000 from the name, and it was called Illuminations, Reflections of Earth. Let me give you some trivia now. A lot of people may not know this. So, you know, when you're waiting, when we were waiting for Reflections of Earth to begin, and we would see the torches, they would be lit, and all of a sudden we would hear the narrator say something like, "We gather tonight, we gather around the fire, blah, blah, blah." That voice belonged to a guy by the name of Jim Cummings, who I think worked for Disney for about 30 or 40 years. He was a pretty famous voice actor. He did a lot of voices, but I'm going to tell you about the two voices that he is known for, and he pretty much says that they are his favorite. One was Winnie the Pooh. A lot of people don't know that Jim Cummings took over for Sterling Holloway as the voice of Winnie the Pooh. He was also the understudy for Paul Winchell, who did the voice of Tigger, but Jim has done both Winnie the Pooh and Tigger. And as a matter of fact, in the live-action film Christopher Robin that came out a year or two ago, I think it was about 2-3 years ago, he actually is the voice of Winnie and Tigger. So little trivia there. Name is Jim Cummings. He's done a lot of voices over the years. All right, let's get back to talking about Illuminations. When we think about the classic Illuminations, Reflections of Earth show that we've seen over the last 20 years or so, there's so much thought that was put into this show. It's divided into three acts. The first act is called Chaos. This is where we see lots of fireworks and fire. And if you can go back and look at some video, you will notice that when Illuminations begins, they use a lot of red and orange and yellow colors in the fireworks. That's to represent the birth of planet Earth. The objective here is to say, oh, this early pyro appears like volcanic eruptions and lava. There was no accident on the choice of the colors. Again, Act 1 is chaos. It ends with a huge, large fireworks burst and fire, and then the music turns somber. Remember I mentioned earlier that the Gavin Greenaway musical compositions really impacted the show? Well, go back, watch the beginning of a video and notice how the music and the final burst of fire and fireworks work together. Remember, Act 1 was called Chaos. Act 2 is called Order. This is where the soft music comes in. This is where the Earth globe starts to move to the center of the lagoon, and it begins to slowly spin. Take a look at the globe, because what happens is that it goes from black to blue to green. The planet is evolving, going from just all water to some land, and then all of a sudden we see images, we see animals, we see humans, we see technology. Again, telling the story of how Earth, animals, humans, technology evolved over time. Act 2, Order, ends with some uplifting and joyful music, joyful display of fireworks above the sphere. Hey, things are going well. Earth is thriving. Act 3 is called Meaning. Everybody remembers the song We Go On. It's actually called Promise. It's not called We Go On. Kelly Coffey is the singer. Promise was composed by Gavin Greenaway. Kelly Coffey sings the song as the torches around the lagoon are lit. The Earth globe opens up. It opens up like a flower, like a blooming flower. And there's another torch inside that is called the Unity Torch. That signifies that humanity continues to go on and evolve, just like the song. Wouldn't you think that that would be a pretty good song to listen to as you're trying to put a pandemic behind you? Just another editorial comment. Sorry, I just couldn't resist. At the end of the show, the finale, it's reported that there are over 1,000 white fireworks launched as the show comes to an end. That's basically the three acts for Reflections of Earth. But there's some more interesting facts that I have found over the years, and it's really, really interesting, and it puts into perspective just how much thought was put into the show. Of course, you've got the barges that moved from behind the China and Germany pavilion. They were put in specific spots on the lagoon every day. They would come under that drawbridge that's just beyond the China pavilion. The Earth globe was 28 feet in diameter. It sat on a 10-foot pedestal. Its weight was 320 tons. It had an infrared guidance system used to navigate that globe. It had the ability to show 200 images in movies. They used 1,500 LED clusters, and a cluster is just a whole bunch of LEDs gathered together. There was an inferno barge that weighed in at 75 tons, and that thing was capable of shooting fireballs 60 feet into the air. No matter where you were around World Showcase, you could feel the heat. By the way, a decision was made to move the fireworks from being launched from that inferno barge to their own separate barge. Probably a very, very good decision. The fireworks were shot not just from the barges, but from 34 locations around the lagoon. And it was coordinated with timing chip technology. So the firework shells could explode in synchronization with the music being played. Instead of using black powder to launch the fireworks, they wanted to cut down on the pollution. And so they used a pneumatic launch system that uses gas or pressurized air to launch the fireworks. Part of the show that I really think adds a lot to it is the laser systems. Now, they installed one in the American Adventure Pavilion, the Canada Pavilion, and the Mexico Pavilion. Other pavilions had these mirrors, and the combination of the lasers and the mirrors was able to produce that ceiling effect. If you remember, there's like a ceiling effect over the lagoon. Pretty interesting to see how that worked together. The like spinning and moving light effects, where we'll showcase, they were programmable, and they basically were used to highlight the smoke and other events at specific times. There were four fountain barges. They each had 40 water nozzles, and they pumped out 4,000 gallons of water per minute. That created a water skirt effect. The barges had an onboard lighting system that displayed different colors and the fountain effects. Now let's get to the torches. There are 19 torches around World Showcase Lagoon. Each one was to represent each century and the first two millenniums. Then, of course, there was the 20th torch, which was the unity torch in the globe. The main control booth for illuminations, the main control booth, was located at the top of the Mexico Pavilion. Illumination used over 60 computers in 40 different locations. I mean, the show was really, really complicated. It's something that a lot of people didn't know. I didn't know until I did a little bit of research. But because the show used outdoor lasers, they have to comply with FAA regulations. And 15 minutes before each show, the control booth had to notify Orlando International Airport so that the air traffic control can be advised that this particular area was using heavy-duty outdoor lasers. Really, really interesting. Like, everything had to be coordinated. Remember how I was talking about the music for the show? Everyone who's listening who has been there understands that prior to the show, there was pre-show music. The pre-show music for Illuminations contained 11 songs from 9 different artists. You know, these artists are not household names. Let me run through a few of them and tell me if you know any of them. Yehuda Poilaca, Silahu, Burning Sky, Cusco, Burak, Grupa, Vasin. Honest to God, those were the names. Then you also had a little bit of John Williams, and you had Gavin Greenaway, and you had Kelly Coffey. But, you know, the others, who knew who they were. But Gavin Greenaway was the major composer for the show. He also wrote Tapestry of Nations. You know, when you put a show together like this, you need special creators, and I guess you'd call them choreographers. You get the music and you get the lighting and everything. So it was a partnership between a guy by the name of Dan Dorsey and Gavin Greenaway, who put together the show. Dan Dorsey has been working with Disney for a long time. He's been involved with a lot of the audio presentations and nighttime spectaculars, and figures out what works, what doesn't, how to put things together. He goes way back. He did the Laserphonic Fantasy. He did Sorcery in the Sky. He does the electronic arrangements for the Main Street. He did the electronic arrangements for the Main Street Electrical Parade. You know, the list goes on and on, but those were some that I thought people would recognize. Gavin Greenaway composed all the music for the show, and he's done a lot of stuff. He's done stuff for major motion films, some musical scores. I don't want to go through all of them. There's a ton. You can look him up on Wikipedia. Gavin Greenaway. How good was Illuminations? Well, guess what? It won 11 consecutive Golden Ticket Awards for being the best outdoor production in the world. That's right. From 2005 to 2015, it was the best outdoor production in the world. The main theme music for the show won an Emmy Award for Gavin Greenaway in 2004. For I think it was the news and documentary category, because the music was used in an ABC documentary. I think I talked about General Electric was the original sponsor. The General Electric sponsorship ran from 1999 to 2003, and then Siemens took over, and they sponsored it from 2005 to 2017. There's some interesting things. You know, I kept on digging and digging and digging, and here's a few other tidbits regarding Illuminations. The fireworks barges that were used had names. Their names were given to them after the country in which they were positioned around World Showcase. I meant to tell everyone that, you know, Gavin Greenaway was not the original composer. It was supposed to be Hans Zimmer, but there was some kind of a scheduling conflict, so Hans Zimmer could not do it, so it was turned over to Gavin Greenaway. Those fireworks cannons that light those Roman candle effects from around the sides of the lagoon, I think when the wind gets to be 15 miles per hour or more, those cannot be launched, because when the wind hits that certain level, it becomes dangerous. You don't know where those things are going to go. When you think about the pre-show, the main show, and the post-show music, Illuminations actually was a 45-minute show. The final Illuminations Reflections of Earth performance was on September 30th, 2019. It was followed by a bridge fireworks show called Epcot Forever. They had the kites and the boats and everything. And then, of course, that was replaced with Harmonious. The original working title for Harmonious was A Celebration of Disney Music, and that was turned into Harmonious. So that's the story of the Epcot Nighttime Spectaculars, and obvious emphasis on Illuminations. As an editorial comment, I'd like to say in closing that as I was doing research and putting all of this together, I was thinking, you know, yeah, it does make sense to replace something that wasn't drawing crowds, but I don't know if Illuminations was having that issue. People continued to flock to Epcot to watch Illuminations at night. Everybody knew the music. Everybody knew the songs. Everybody knew what to expect. Still, we went every single night. Something else struck me while I was doing this research, and that is that, you know, Illuminations had a message. And it's funny how Illuminations left us before this pandemic hit. But in the midst of a pandemic, especially of a pandemic that hopefully is in the rear mirror, wouldn't it have been appropriate to continue to have a show like Illuminations every night proclaiming we go on while a unity torch burns to illustrate a brighter future for all of us? Makes you wonder. I personally will never forget Illuminations, and I'm guessing a lot of you out there will say the same thing. Will be nodding your heads as you listen to me. So anyways, before I say goodbye, I want to bring everyone back to the beginning of this journey. Remember when I was talking about that entrepreneur, Paul Mack, and his company, Mack Rides? Well, like I said earlier, Mack Rides owns Europa Park, which, again, to me, kind of serves as a blueprint for Epcot's World Showcase. But here's a tidbit I'd like to leave with you. Mack Rides is still creating attractions for theme parks around the world. And I want you to remember Paul Mack and Mack Rides and thank them for building a very popular ride at Walt Disney World, at Disney Hollywood Studios, at Toy Story Land. Its name, Slinky Dog Dash. And now you know the rest of the story. So for my podcast partners, Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean and Chris Haleopoulos, this is Mike Scopa saying thanks for listening, and we will see you on the road and in the parks.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.